Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
I'm Chris Lindstrom, and this is the Food About Town podcast.
Rochester? Well, why Rochester?
Chris Lindstrom was a hoot. He was just so much fun. He never stopped talking. I mean, it was great.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Then we don't need any characters around to give the joint atmosphere. Is that clear?
Because I'm a pro. That's what pros do. I'm a professional. Look it up in the book.
But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
And we are back with another episode of the Food About Town podcast. Wait a second. It's an episode, so... that's all over the place. Oh my God. I'm not sure that's the best way to start an episode, so I'm going to keep all that in. I am going to pause, and we'll be right back. Whew, yeah, there's no gap for you, but there's a gap for me. So, guest, why don't you introduce yourself, and we're going to talk about the situation that just happened.
Well, it's great to reconnect with you, Chris. I'm Brett Holland. I'm the chef at Fox Run Vineyards, and it's great to be up here in Rochester.
It's been a hot minute, man. I think we've run into each other like randomly over the last few years, but I haven't had you over since. And weirdly, I actually had Gene Olchek from Karma Sauce, which is the last time you were up here to record, I think.
It is.
I just had him over like a week or so ago. I think it's going to come out after this series for previewing the Glorious Garlic Festival in scenic Geneva, New York, coming up on the weekend of... August 1st.
Yeah, coming up. And, I'm going to be doing a cooking demo class, whatever you want to call it, on Sunday. And looking forward to that.
Yeah. So before we get into all the details, let's talk about the situation that just occurred. So you ask for something from the fridge, you ask for an NA beer, I give you a nice Jenny NA. Nothing wrong with that. Enjoying it so far?
Oh, absolutely.
Pretty tasty.
It's actually my first Jenny NA.
Yeah. I mean, rock solid, like really good. Shout out to, I think Chris Clemens gave me those my co-founder Matt Austin gave me a 12 pack of that. And I'm like, I'll pull out an NA today. I pull out, I think this was from an episode I did with Chris Clemens about NA beers, pulled out a Bravis Blood Orange IPA, which I really enjoy. I pull up to the desk and everything's fine. I crack it open. This thing, half of it comes out as foam, half. All over my chair, all over the carpet in the studio. Thankfully, not all over my laptop.
Looked a little bit like a volcano from this side.
It was a hell of a thing. So I am going to, everybody's going to see a clip of that because I think I got myself on video being all flustered.
Awesome.
Let's just get the plugs in one more time. I think it is gloriousgarlicfest.com. I'm just going to go check that right now and get the hours in. So Garlic Festival, August 2nd and 3rd at the Geneva Waterfront. And the hours, let me just double check. Yeah, this is always the fun part about this, is getting all the hours right. But it's Glorious Garlic Festival, gloriousgarlicfestival.com. And then parking adjacent. And I think it's like from 10 to 6 on Saturday, 10 to 5 on Sunday. So lots of time to go out and enjoy beautiful weather. Looks like it's going to be an amazing weekend in the Finger Lakes.
Sure. And, for that festival, I've been at Fox Run for 11 years and did the festival at Fox Run for a number of those years. And then they moved it to the lakefront, But when the weather was great, it was 7,000, 8,000 people at the winery, and it's just it's the same or more up in Geneva.
Yeah, so, and it was a great place to have it too at Fox Run, because I talked about that with the organizer, and it really was a special place. I mean, I went a bunch of times when it was at Fox Run, and having it out in the lawn, you know, looking at all the vines and everything, it really was a beautiful place for it.
Yeah, I mean, the venue, you know, we get a lot of people that come just to look around anyway. I mean, the Finger Lakes, we all know, is just a beautiful place to live in.
Absolutely.
And to have something like that kind of festival with the music all day long and the setup and all the garlic and the vendors. And I mean, it was just soup to nuts. It was garlic. But, you know, when the weather cooperates around here, it's really awesome.
Yeah, because I remember you would also have like catered stuff on the menu inside too. Like you did some adjustments to the like to the menu to add more garlic to it.
Almost everything had garlic. I mean, we do that anyway. You know, some people come in and they're like, "Oh, do you have anything without garlic?" And we're kind of usually like, "No, not really."
I mean, do you not like flavor? Are you okay?
But honestly, I mean, we used to rent refrigerators and freezers and things to be able to hold enough food for just the 2 days on the weekend.
Oh yeah,
because there were so many people coming through, and it just the amount of volume that we did, and you know we tried to keep most. You know, if you weren't a vendor, we tried to make sure that you know folks were buying our food because we were really putting a lot of effort into it. But and they're doing the same up in Geneva, so it's a really great festival.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your demo before we go into general talk, because I know you and I can talk for hours at a time about things. Let's talk about what the demo is. So what's the demo you're doing? And then we'll talk about what it takes to do those.
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, my angle is always to try to pull together as many local things as you can, you know, whether it's a producer or an ingredient or something I can, you know, put things together and make and showcase, whether it's that producer, farmer, ingredient, that's always the angle. And, you know, this year, I just picked up some blue corn and some organic chickpeas from Klaus Martens, you know, and people that know farming and organic farming here in the region. I mean, Klaus Martens works with people all over the country and, you know, Dan Barber especially, and developing things and providing product for them. That's just really, really amazing. So, but he's right down the street from me, and I go right up to his, you know, grain cleaning facility, and you can just pick up anything, and it's just crazy what you can get. So, I'm looking at probably doing some kind of tostada, either with some hummus with that, you know, those chickpeas, probably pull some pork or something and make some slaw. I mean, it might be a little more complicated than it sounds.
It'll be
simple enough where we can pump out some samples for everyone,
serve it pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, that's a great one. So that's what you're demoing. So when you're thinking about how to set up for a demo, right, you're thinking about a dish, but you're also thinking about what's interesting to talk about and what are we actually instructing people on during the demo, right? Because you can do the demo of just cooking the thing, but there's so many different ways to do a food demo. It can be very instructive. It can just be, hey, we're doing a show and giving you food to eat. How do you think about doing a food demo?
I honestly think about it in terms of components and, you know, how can I show people, you know, the tricks that are going to make it look like something they can make at home. I've been teaching classes in Corning at 171 Cedar Arts for about 26 years now, and I have a great following, and that's what a lot of times what people say, you know, they'll look at a recipe, I'll demo something, and at the end of the class, it's kind of like, you know, what I like about your classes is I can watch what you do, and then I know I have the confidence to do it at home. So a little bit of it is simplicity, a little bit of it is the setup of the actual sort of show, the demonstration, so that it actually does look simple and easy, and then, you know, not too many ingredients. It's kind of one of those things. I went down to see an Emerald show one time in New York City, and it was just really, really interesting to see the backside of what happens when the camera's not on.
Oh, yeah.
And the number of people that were down there helping them was, like, amazing.
But, bringing everything out, like, everything pre-prepped, pre-cooked.
And, you know, when they go to a commercial break, the band starts playing, and, you know, people come out, and they talk to Emerald, and they set up the next segment. And that's kind of how I've approached it. I actually learned a lot. It was so much fun down there. And, you know, Emeril's just a real showman. So it's like,
oh, absolutely.
You can just always learn from stuff like that.
So you mentioned you've been doing doing these classes or, you know, demos at Corning for a long time. Explain what is that and what kind of situation is that? Is that like a longer course? Is that?
Well, it's kind of evolved over the years. I mean, we were originally in a church basement for a while. You know, my dear friend, Neil O'Donnell, who's since passed away, you know, I'm kind of carrying the torch for him. He was a really, really great man. And a lot of people just remember him for kind of helping start the program. And I came, actually, it was Christmas 1999. He just wanted some help with a class that he was doing. And I came over and did it. And he said, you know, I need to bring you in and I'm going to teach you some things. And so, you know, I always like to say that I do some of the things that I do because of Neil.
Yeah.
And essentially, we were always looking for a different location, but we always kept getting people saying, hey, why don't we just do them at 171 and either continue to do the demonstration cooking or maybe we could do hands-on somehow. And we did, right before COVID, we had it all set up to do hands-on. And we did one class that was hands-on. And I tell you, people were just enthralled. So much more fun. You know, not that our classes weren't fun when they're just demonstration, but, you know, sitting and watching and taking notes and getting a tasting, you know, every half hour or so is fun. But getting your hands dirty and having somebody come around and you're chopping all your things and tasting stuff as it's rolling.
People are laughing at mistakes and you're just having a good time, like doing something that should be fun, should be communal. It shouldn't be stressful.
Right. Right.
For most things. I mean, sometimes stress is inevitable, but the idea is that it should be a good time with friends and family, just doing something you enjoy doing.
Right. Right. And so, you know, more recently in the last couple of years, I really felt strongly about like having some of the wineries get connected into what I'm doing over there because I do a lot of fundraising for them with some various things that Sherry and I do at our house. We do a great grape stomping demonstration where we pick grapes and we actually make wine with a group. And, you know, it's part of our fundraising effort. But, you know, doing the actual classes, I just really felt like I wanted to bring in some of the wineries and some of my friends that own wineries and winemakers and introduce them over there to the people in Corning. And so we've been doing these 90-minute classes, which, you know, are about half. The old classes used to be about 3 hours.
Oh, wow, really?
And so they were long classes
and
lots of recipes. And I think the format we're doing now is really great because it's generally three recipes, three wines. So we bring three different wines, whether it's Fox Run wines or Anthony Road wines or Herman J. Weimer wines. It's just a lot of fun. People are loving the wine tasting part, and I think it's really beneficial for the wineries.
Yeah, I think it's also, like, you get a chance to really, I think sometimes there's this mystical, you know, big, you know, there's this wall of information that people feel like they have to get over to enjoy wine. And I think those kind of situations are great. So people don't feel intimidated.
Sure.
Buy it because like, hey, I'm giving you this. Hey, you don't have to think about it. You don't have to pick. You get to just be given something that's going to work with this. It's not too serious. You know, it's for everybody, right? Wine's for everybody and it should be enjoyed. And that's a great way of doing it without the pressure in many ways of, I think this people feel judged sometimes when they go to a restaurant. They don't know how to order. They don't know the words to describe what they like.
Right. Right.
And those kind of situations sometimes gives them that information without you saying you should like this. Just
right.
Like, hey, try it. See what you like. See what you think.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the shorter classes too. You know, we have a lot of time to sit around at the end, and you know, when we're on schedule, if we don't have too many questions, or I'm famous for telling long stories, so I'll try not to do that here today. But yeah, you never know.
So, and I love when you mentioned, you know, the farmer and you mentioned those two ingredients, but I love that those are the first two ingredients you mentioned, right? You're not mentioning like, oh yeah, we'll figure out what else goes on there. But those are the basis, right?
Sure.
You know, great blue corn and your organic chickpeas. So have you used some of that local like corn, like the blue corn and other things before?
Actually, the blue corn is something new that I have never seen.
Oh, exciting.
I just picked up the bags the other day. They're actually, in fact, they're in the back of my car.
Nice.
And if you want some chickpeas, I'll happily crack open the bag and scoop some out for you. Because it just makes amazing. The beans are so much smaller than the ones in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're just packed full of flavor.
Are they thicker skin-on versions, too?
No, they're just... I can't wait to show you.
I'm excited to look at them because I've cooked a decent amount of dried chickpeas. Mm-hmm. Actually, the process is very easy, especially if you have a pressure cooker. I mean, it's like basically falling off a log, cooking those in a pressure cooker. But often I'll go to like the Indian grocery store and I'll buy some of them that are smaller, but they'll be like the thicker skin versions, like thicker red skins on them. I actually really like the texture of them, but it's not the same as what people, you know, the chickpeas people are used to coming out of, you know, coming out of a can or what most people see. Like the stuff you get that are more specifically grown for flavor first, not just like consistency.
Right.
Like they're a very different product.
Yeah. Very, very different. And, you know, whatever I can buy from them. I mean, they have a ton of beans. So Seneca Grain and Bean .com is their website. And, you know, you can click on there and you can, shop through what they have available. You know, they even process some sugar, I think, for someone in Paraguay. I think don't quote me on that one, but you can look it up.
Yeah.
And it's just a treat to be able to have someone in your backyard like that. You know, there's a lot of ingredients. I think we were talking when I looked at the Jenny can, 1878. And, one of my favorite dates to throw out there to people at Food and Wine Experience at Fox Run is 1797 is when Burkitt Mills was started. And, you know, they're the world's largest buckwheat producer, but they also do all kinds of other grains. They make my favorite pastry flour. It's called Bessie. It actually has a name, which is kind of cool.
I love
and,
that.
You know, George Washington was president back then. So it's, it's kind of like this legacy ingredient. And it's just really cool to be able to use stuff like that.
Yeah. And I'm kind of intrigued. So now that we're talking, let's talk about blue corn for a second. So you haven't used it before. Have you done a lot of, dried, whole grain corn and processing before?
No, actually, it's funny you mentioned that because we were just doing paella over at Rio Tomatlan in Canandaigua. And Rafael, the chef there, Raf, as everyone calls him, he just told me that he's got this two big grain mills upstairs at Rio. And when I told him I had the blue corn, I was just like, yeah, man, I'll bring you some over and we can make tortillas and I'll be your assistant. You know, I've not made a ton of tortillas in my life, but, living in Arizona, got to see a little bit of that.
Cause there's a whole process.
There is. Sure.
So, I mean, this is, and I'm intrigued. So let's just dive into the details. Have you thought about, are you going to nishmalize all the corn? So have you decided how you're going to do that or if you're going to mess around with it?
Not really. That's what I was telling Sherry on the way up here, where she's like, do you know what you're doing yet? And I'm like, well, I kind of have an idea, but I'm going to have to think about it this week.
Where are you going to buy your food grade lye?
Yeah, right. we just had a 3-week run of, really busy at Fox Run, really busy at Tabora. And, we did some side parties for folks, down on some lake properties and, didn't really have much bandwidth to think about a lot of stuff. So at least we came with the idea and we'll deliver it and figure out what we're going to do this week.
Sorry, I said lye. I meant lime.
Oh.
So alkaline solution, usually with lime and then obviously grinding and turning it in there. But having access to like a good grinder meant for that will make a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. I was actually looking them up because I don't have one personally. And I think... we're probably going to try to make a drive over to Rio and maybe see what we can do.
Little bit of a trade.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
For sure.
Because that's one of those amazing things that was discovered, that process was they've been doing that for hundreds of years. And mostly because, they found that it was just useful, one, for flavor and two, for the health benefits of actually, turning it into something that's more digestible and more usable. And all those things, but also makes these amazing textures when you get it right. It makes these pliable, lightly bouncy things in a way that, we took something that would just be ground into like polenta, which, by the way, for everybody, that's all polenta is, by the way. It's just ground corn into certain size pieces.
Right, right, right.
But with that process, you turn into something completely different. But that's the amazing thing about technique and knowledge and being able to, you know, eventually show people that, hey, this same thing that can be, you know, can be corn syrup, it can be polenta, and it can be like these amazing flour products that turn into bouncy tortillas or crispy tostadas.
Yeah, sure.
All at the same time.
The beauty of food science, you know, we've come a long way with a lot of things. You know, we're not just mushing up corn anymore to make porridge, right?
I mean, we can, and maybe we should.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. So we talked about the demo. So you're doing, it's instructive. People are getting samples. They're going to come out and have a great time. So what I kind of want to go into is, so last time we were talking, so still cooking at Fox Run, still running the kitchen there.
Yes.
Now, that place is so consistently busy, especially with the volume of people coming through during the, you know, during prime time, during the season. How many days a week is Fox Run like busy that you're just like cranking food out all day?
If you think about from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day and, you know, into September and mid-October, it's almost every day. And, you know, a lot of it is weather dependent. You know, the one thing around here is, you know, when it downpours, the problem for, you know, some smaller wineries that don't have a lot of space or, you know, adjacent areas where you can accommodate people, you know, if it's super sunny out and you get like a really crazy afternoon, rainstorm or something like that, they don't have anywhere for people to go. The cool thing about Fox Run is we have a lot of space outdoors, but we also have some sneaky little spaces where we can put people, inside and, you know, that we call it the barrel room. It's where they used to make all the wine when they first opened.
Yeah.
It's a decent space where we can fit probably 50 people. So, that makes a huge difference for us. And the winery itself is pretty big. And, you know, we've been around for, this is our 35th year. So we're celebrating our 35th anniversary. We had a big party in the spring.
Oh, that's awesome.
Scott loves to celebrate that. And it's been a good run there for them. And, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm. I laughed too much on that one, man. So, you know, in the busy season, and what I'm kind of intrigued about is, so I'm assuming that, like, with that kind of volume, one, you need to be focusing on consistency all the time for that volume. But as you've been there, like, how long have you been there now? It's been a while, right?
So it's 11 years.
11 years.
You know, before that, I was doing some smaller events. You know, yeah. there was a time when I was probably doing events for three or four other wineries at the same time. And occasionally I still do that, you know, for our kind of friends. And
so you mentioned Tabora. I don't know that place.
So Tabora Farm and Winery opened about 7 or 8 years ago. Yeah, like 8 years ago. And, there's a couple that moved up from Philadelphia. They actually had a Tabora Farm and Orchard down in Philly in Bucks County.
I did go in there.
You could probably
that,
look that up. And, you know, it's...
I know where Bucks County is. There's a curling club there.
Yeah. On occasion, there's a little bit of confusion because of the name being so similar and unique. But the great style. And, Jane Etherton is originally from South Africa. So she's got that great British accent that people are attracted to. And she, you know,
and loves they have that cafe.
People.
And that's what I was, that's where I went in
exactly,
for.
Exactly. And great space, great design, great food, you know, and it's, you know, when you figure out what people want on the wine trail, they gravitate towards it and they start talking about it. And, that's kind of what they've done. You know, they've only been around for 8 years and, you know, you go down there on a Saturday and you're going to wait in line for a little bit.
Yeah. And I that menu is very targeted to, this is what people generally want on the wine thing. And they want to be able to, you know, pull off and have something that is going to satisfy them and is, yeah, it's not reaching the furthest in what it is, but it is doing something that people want, right? They want their grilled sandwiches. They want this, they want that. And it's there for them and lots of snacks. like while you're driving around, you need your snacks, like you can go get all that stuff right there.
Sure.
Which is really nice.
You know, and there's not that many restaurants actually on the wine trail.
There really isn't, you know, especially on the west side. I mean, there's like, it's up to the north, then there's the Wienery and that place and you, and that's really
about it
until you get to the bottom of the lake. I think that really that is about it, right?
Down on Watkins Glen. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it's, that is a long distance and a lot of wine tasting if that's all you have and you're not prepped ahead of time.
And the catch 22 is, you know, it's everyone's driving 55, 65 miles an hour. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to get people to stop, but you know, the visibility that we have at Fox Run with our, you know, really unique gate built by Sam Kastner, you know, it's the local metal artist. He's done a number of, you know, signs and gates and things like that.
And it's a beautiful.
Yeah, it's stunning. And it does, it actually stops people. And they'll turn around and come back for sure.
100%.
But, you know, we've got great marketing. You know, Garrison Cool is our marketing guy. And, you know, he's young, he's connected and plugged in, and he gets the people to come, which is cool. And, you know, not just for the winery, but for events, for the cafe.
Yeah.
Always trying to, you know, scratch everything and get everybody to come.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also, it's one of those things that's hard to underestimate how important it is nowadays, that having somebody that is paying attention to this is what people are looking for, right? And it is marketing what has been a quality thing, right? A good cafe where you can go in and get food that is local, is made well, it's made with intention, and it's made to be delicious and stuff you can have alongside wine at a place. And you have affordable, high-quality wines at the same place. And you can bring big groups and you can go to individuals. And it's just a place that, with the right attention, you should be bringing in more people with that. It should be a standard stop on the side of the lake. But the marketing, especially as you have more people who don't know, right? Because it's, people are new. People are new to wine. People are new to the Finger Lakes. And even though we all, I think those of us who appreciate the Finger Lakes for what they are and know how amazing it is, there's still way more people that don't spend time driving down and enjoying it from Rochester when we have a world-class wine region within 1 hour of your door. And it's still amazing to me how few people understand how good everything is.
Yeah. And it's, we get people in the winery every day and it's that, wow, we never realized this was here.
Yeah.
What are you looking at? You know, what are you paying attention to? I don't know.
I think that's where the marketing comes in too, is it's reaching people where they are and not hoping that they're going to understand the message. You know, different messages hit different people, right? And I'm not here to shame people for not going. For me, I always want to make it sound the most enticing I can, but I'm a nerd first, right? I want to talk about, hey, you can go get amazing quality things at a price that beats almost anywhere, both in the, like, in the world in many ways, price-wise to quality-wise. It's one of the best wine regions in the world. And I want people to really feel that and appreciate that and love it deeply like I do. But at the same time, that's not what everybody wants, right? Not everybody wants to like go nerd out all day. Some people want to have their party and take their bus and go down and enjoy places. But I'm always hoping that they just find that one thing that grabs them in a way they didn't expect. That they find the one thing that makes them excited to come back, that it sparks something in their head like, oh, wow, that was awesome. And not just the day, but that one sandwich they had or that one cheese they had or the pairing they had, like at Fox Run, makes them say, God, you know what? I got to come back and have that again.
Yeah, or something else. I mean, the one thing that we do a lot of is that we're just constantly looking for new products, constantly looking for new producers and seeing what they have and how it matches up with our wines. And
we
spend a lot of time in the early part of the winter, you know, and then right before spring, before we open up, just tasting things and tasting the new wines, tank sampling. And, you know, we have so many things that we offer people. You know, we're not just pouring what's in the bottle. There are a lot of special things that we do on tours, a lot of special things that we do with events, and just constantly trying to highlight new stuff, new people. I just drove today almost to Canandaigua to a new guy that's doing some hydroponic lettuce.
Okay.
But he's also growing tilapia in the same sort of operation. And it was just really interesting to see.
Yeah.
Like, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah. Circular aquaculture.
Yeah.
I always found that fascinating. And I think in the best possible way, if that's what you're doing, like, what a great opportunity to make a more durable system for something that you created. Because you're feeding the fish and the fish are feeding the plants, and you get better hydroponic things that way too.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Misty Meadows Farm.
Oh, very cool.
Awesome.
So I think we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about some of the stuff you've been testing recently, some of the things you want to highlight, talk about changes to the menu, and we'll be right back. And we're back with the second half of our discussion with Brett Howland from Fox Run Winery. I'm not drinking NA anymore, everybody. Doing a demo at the Glorious Garlic Festival, gloriousgarlicfestival.com, happening at the Geneva Lakefront on August 2nd and 3rd, this following Saturday and Sunday. So check out Brett's demo on Sunday. Taste some cool blue corn. We'll see how it turns out.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to talk about... So... been there for a long time. I kind of want to talk about some of the other stuff you've tried recently or stuff you've been like evolving the menu towards. Because I know, you know, it's a menu that's supposed to be approachable for people, right? It's supposed to be focusing on local, supposed to be approachable. But what are the kind of things you've been tasting that have informed the way you're changing the menu over the last, you know, couple of years?
You know, when I first started there, they didn't really want to have sandwiches on the menu. They didn't want to be known as a sandwich place.
Yeah.
So they basically took them all off. And I was kind of like, well, maybe you should have like one sandwich, you know. And everybody kind of agreed, all right, well, we'll do a sandwich. And I was like, you know, just a good old-fashioned turkey club is something that like so many people like, you know. And it doesn't have to be on three slices of bread and
yeah.
You know, all that, you know, yada, yada, yada. So we found a great bun maker here in Rochester, Amazing Grains. And, you know, Brandon ships us they used to actually call them, I think, Fox Buns.
Did they really?
We asked them to do a certain kind of bun with a certain, you know, two kinds of seeds, you know, poppy seeds and sesame seeds.
Okay.
And, I can't remember the last time he called them Fox Buns, but you know, he's going to laugh when he hears that.
That's pretty good.
But, you know, we give them a lot of credit for that in terms of just people love the buns. And we toast every single bun that we make a sandwich with. We put a little garlic butter on it. We put it in the oven. It gets all toasty and super soft. And it makes the best sandwich.
So let's talk about the structure. So you talked about the seeds, right? And you're talking about the process, right? So toasting, making sure you get that textural contrast inside, which I'm a wildly huge advocate for, especially when you put sauces on it, right? It doesn't get mushy. You get that little layer and you get the textural and flavor add. But let's talk about the style of bun it is. So is this enriched? Is it more pillowy? Does it have more structure on the outside? When you were thinking about this, did they already have it, or is it one that you worked with them to dial in?
It was actually one that I was making.
Oh, really?
And I think it's a version of that. It's not exact. And, you know, being a baker myself and, you know, Brandon's awesome over there. I love going to that place. He's such a character. I think it's a version of their brioche bun, you know?
Okay.
So it's light. It's kind of almost buttery already.
So it's mildly enriched. So it's got that texture. It's got a little bit of chew, but everything else is about just like that pleasant experience.
It's crispy on the top when you brown it. And,
yeah.
You know, it just really makes an ideal like sandwich, you know, base foundation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a club is easy. Oh, lettuce, tomato, you can put some sprouts on there if you want. You know, really good bacon, thick cut bacon from Bostrom Farms. And then, you know, it's just some sliced smoked turkey. And we make an aioli, you know, because it's not just mayonnaise.
Sure.
It gives it a lot of flavor. And we roast garlic. And we have a whole process where we roast garlic with, we do bulbs. We do the plain You know, sometimes we'll just buy, you know, cleaned up cloves and do it that way. But it's kind of a process where we oil them. We have a little bit of olive oil. Sometimes we'll put the squash seed oil from Stony Brook if we're looking for a real nutty flavor. And
shout out to that place. I mean, yeah. those seeds are so good.
Yeah, their stuff's amazing too. And I love to use their oil in dressings because it's so flavorful and dark.
You don't need a lot. Like yeah. You can use vegetable for a lot of the base and use some of that.
Right, right.
Because using just that would be like almost overwhelming. Oh,
it's super intense for sure. And I've done it before, but you know, sometimes we'll add some stuff. And you know, we like to use Pat Cosimano's stuff too. He's always in the market, but you know, he comes to our place and he just sells, you know, tons and tons and tons, like thousands of dollars worth of olive oil in just an afternoon. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
So, you know, we put together this aioli and we roast the garlic with, you know, a little bit of oil, a little bit of dry thyme or fresh thyme if we have it, a little bit of salt, pepper, and we put it in the oven and we get them kind of brown and we kind of toss them a little bit like popcorn almost.
Yeah.
And get them sort of browning up. And then we pour a bunch of Riesling, semi-dry Riesling over the top. And then we wrap it with foil and let it sit in the oven another maybe 20 minutes or so. So it gets really, really soft, but nice and brown. And you just get some really amazing dark flavor out of that. Gives the aioli a little bit of color.
Yeah.
And, you know, we put a little bit of raw garlic in there with it. So you get a little bit of punch.
I think it's important. I think that's an important thing that is wildly underused. And I think that's, you know, if you're paying attention to, you know, cooking techniques from around the world, that is wildly common in like Chinese cooking, right? Especially, you know, just adding that little bit of raw garlic right at the end of the cooking process.
Yeah.
To get that brightness. Like you want that little bit of kick of the freshness, or else it can be delicious, but it's all like mid low tones. Like that little bit of brightness from that sharpness really makes a huge difference in the experience.
Yeah, and you know, there's so much else on the sandwich. You know, you're cutting through like rich, you know, fatty bacon, so you do need some oomph to it, which is cool. And I can't tell you how many people just love that sandwich because it's so simple.
Yeah,
and it's really been it took off like crazy.
But also what an opportunity to, like, for something that almost everybody has had that sandwich. They haven't had that sandwich, but they've had a turkey club, right?
Turkey club.
Almost everybody's had it. But what an opportunity to, when you're talking about all the steps that go into that, right? So we talked about basically every ingredient that goes into that. Like, what an opportunity for somebody to say, oh, that's the best one of these I've ever had. But that's because every step was thought through, right? You're not just you don't accidentally make that.
Definitely not.
It would be very hard to accidentally make something with that much going on in it.
Yeah. And again, I go back to that, you know, you're always thinking about all the components and, you know, each component is important. You know, it's like the weak link in a chain.
Mm-hmm.
You have one weak thing in a dish and it's kind of like, that can crash it.
Right. Because you'll serve it in the winter and you'll use the best tomatoes you can. But you know that serving it in, you know, July with fresh tomatoes is, you know, fresh local tomatoes is going to be a wildly different sandwich than it is in January.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it makes such a big difference. But you know that right now you season them, you're putting them on there and like, ooh, how many people are going to be thinking about the tomato versus the turkey on this?
Right, right. Yeah, and actually we added a new sandwich this year. So we added another sandwich. You know, we were thinking about doing some hoagies, you know, some Philly-style hoagies or, you know, some other version of a sub, which kind of got put on the back burner. We did them for a special event, which was a lot of fun, for the Super Bowl, actually.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good time, yeah.
It was kind of crazy, yeah. But we went ahead and threw something out there for the vegetarians. You know, we were using, you know, portobello mushrooms, and we would marinate them in Pat's balsamic vinegar and olive oil and garlic. And, you know, I would make a little bit of the dressing with the squash seed oil. I mean, these are all ingredients that I love to use.
Oh, sure.
And the nuttiness of that oil in combination with the mushrooms. And then they would literally just roast like a whole mushroom in the oven, and it just substituted for the meat part on the club. And some people would order that one and they'd want the bacon on it. So, you know, it wasn't exclusively for vegetarians. And so we decided to switch it up this year. We'd been doing that one for probably 5 years. So we went with the caprese kind of style, like eggplant caprese. So we slice and roast eggplant. We get fresh mozzarella. The tomatoes, when they're amazing, it just makes a sandwich like that. And we kind of do it a little bit the same. And so for the vegan folks, we just take off the cheese. We put a little bit of roasted red pepper tapenade with lots of roasted peppers and, some Kalamata olives. And, you get a lot of flavor out of that just instead of using something like aioli.
Sounds like I know what my next stop is on the road, because I eat that way like 98% of the time. And like what a nice thing though to be able to offer something with that much flavor. Like, and it's not purely about accessibility. It's not just saying, hey, this is your thing. It's not the token like, oh, now for you people, you get red sauce pasta with badly steamed vegetables in it, and like, that's good enough for you people.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's like, hey, why not generate great flavor? Like, why not offer something that is like a better experience? Because like, that's, I don't know, that's just, one, it's respectful, and two, like, why not maximize deliciousness while you're making something?
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't have gotten into cooking unless I liked doing that. You know, it is a fun process to kind of, think about ingredients and what can I do with them? How can I pull out the best, qualities of whatever it is I'm using, and it's one of the reasons why it's so much fun to work at Foxrun, because they appreciate that and they love that process of trial and error and testing everything out so that we know that it works. And yeah.
So let's talk about some of the other products. So you mentioned that you've had some stuff you've tried over the last, last season or something that was something that was inspiring you. So has there been any like other sources of products that have been like, oh, this is something I want to mess around with more?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, maybe more than a couple of years ago, there was Hudson Valley Fisheries out south of Albany in Hudson, New York. Fish is kind of one of my things. I mean, I grew up eating a lot of fish and shellfish as a kid, and it is kind of one of the things I just love to cook. And getting fresh fish, I mean, I love Wegmans, and they have a great seafood program, but, Hudson Valley, I can get fish 2 days out of the water from them,
Oh, wow.
It's like, that's kind of hard-pressed unless you're out on the ocean and, at one of the markets in one of the big cities, New York, Boston, Philly, something like
right,
that.
Right, the big, big fish depots.
Yeah,
that...
Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
All those places, yeah, you can get really super awesome fish. But, it's still coming off a boat that's been out for a couple of weeks, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really, really amazing stuff. And trout, steelhead trout is a little different. I've had a lot of people say, oh, no, that's salmon, isn't it? Isn't that salmon? I mean, it looks just like salmon.
Well, I mean, so... All right, let's do it. Okay, so I was debating if we should get into fish taxonomy, and I think we're going to talk. Let's talk fish taxonomy for a second. So one, they're not wrong. So steelhead trout are trout isn't like an actual category. Trout is like something that was built as a structure to classify a group of fish together, but it's not like taxonomy. Like trout isn't like a separate designation.
Sure.
So there's the salmonoid trout and then the other side of it that are not salmonoid trout. And like steelhead are most identifiably salmonoid trouts because of the color and flavor, but other ones are definitively not. I think some of them are a variation, like it's just a different angle, because really they're mostly salmonoid fish.
Yeah, and
if I remember correctly.
I mean, even the breaking down the actual whole fish, the flesh itself, it literally looks like salmon. But, there are so many things about the fish that doesn't smell like salmon. And it definitely doesn't have the same texture as salmon
for
when
sure.
It's cooked. And the flavor and aroma to me are the biggest difference. And I think it's so much milder. It's For people that are kind of about fish, I always say, you should try this trout because it's so much milder. And, we do a lot of curing, and I like both hot smoking and cold smoking. And, the textures are just very, very different. We do a little bit of Gravlax. We sold so much Gravlax with the steelhead trout on Mother's Day. It was crazy.
Talk about the process in making that. So what? It's an amazing process. So this has roots in the Nordic culture, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean,
Gravlax is like was Nordic originally.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely a Scandinavian thing. But you know, people have been preserving fish and meat with salt for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
Or longer.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic idea is that the salt is drawing out enough moisture to preserve the fish. And back before refrigeration, it was so that you could actually store the fish and not have it make you really sick.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, right?
Yeah, it makes a big difference. But there's a fine line in terms of food science and then palatability of things that like the salt cod that the Italians use, that you have to literally rinse the salt out. And, with Gravlax, the process is you want to put just enough salt so that it, over the course of 3 or 4 days, it actually makes its way in, but keeps the texture of the fish so that you can slice it paper thin, but also does its job to preserve the fish. And then, adding the flavor the way I was trained to make it, the 3 days after the initial salting, where you're weighting the fish. And I just love the idea of the fresh herbs, maybe a little bit of cracked black pepper. The Scandinavians would put like aquavit, but mm-hmm. we do Riesling. I've done port before.
Oh, that so would make an amazing product.
You can get creative
product.
with what you do and the products that you have at your fingertips, which for me, we always have tons of Chardonnay and, All the different wines that we have.
That would work great. And that's not like you're soaking in it, right? You're brushing it on to try to add that flavor while it's also, while it's being salted in the fridge, like it's, going on and it's absorbing it in. Sometimes it helps the herbs bring the stuff out too.
Sure. And it's contributing to some flavor, and the big thing years ago was like layering, you're basically just adding a layer of flavor and it's perceivable for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's all about flavor and texture and how people, fish is not meant to be fishy.
So, yeah.
When you get something that's like super, super fresh, a couple of days out of the water, it literally has no, the salmon, really fresh salmon, it smells a lot like cucumber. And when you point that out to people, they're like, oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And especially ones that are wild and they're eating eating things and moving around more. Right, you're getting more active things. And yeah, it's going to taste a little more, it's a little stronger because they're working, right? It's just like any animal that is, not a working or not having the ability to move around and work, you're going to get a softer, sweeter flavor. But, it's not the same. You're not getting that punch of beautiful flavor. And then, if you want more intense fish, that's where you go for. You go for your mackerel. Right? You're getting those more intense flavors, but some people love that. My wife loves that. Carrie's a huge fan of mackerel, and especially having it at a really nice sushi place where they're, you might treat it, you might smoke it, you might fire it to make this amazing fish more balanced and doing that. But it's all about technique, right? We're talking about technique for a reason, and you created something that people love. Right? Right. You created a product through the work that you say you just sell a ton of. And what a great thing that you can do the work and people are appreciating it.
Yeah. No, it's a great thing to be a chef. It's kind of been my life's work and I'm still loving it. So
yeah. So right now, so we talked about a lot of the menu, about some recent products. Is there anything else that's that you've seen recently that's been inspiring you, that whether it be a media thing or something else you've run into that you've just got sitting in the back of your head that you're not sure what to do with yet?
It's the inspiration, it comes from everywhere. And it's, whether it's a picture you see, you can be reading an article and just, you're just, a sentence could be in there and describing something. It doesn't even have to be a food article necessarily. And it gets you thinking gets the wheel turning about maybe I should look into trying to do that. And, cooking technique wise, there's actually not that many techniques in terms of if you actually think about cooking and training people how to actually cook, most of most of the in-home cooking. I had a friend who worked for World Kitchen, and in fact, I just saw his son today. Neil Hart is the guy's name.
Amazing organization. World Central Kitchen?
No, not World Central Kitchen. World Kitchen. It used to be a consumer products company.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, where was I going with that?
No, it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so you're mentioning, you know, you talked to somebody, you were talking about inspiration, and you mentioned you ran into somebody from World Kitchen about something, maybe. Well, it's okay. So, I don't know, for me, often it comes from, like, when I go to a city, I do spend a lot of time, like, trying to find out what is this place good at? Not what people know it for, but what are the specific foods from places that I get to experience and learn about, for me, sometimes for the first time? Or what is this city great at that people don't appreciate it for? Like, we went to Philadelphia, and yes, we went and got the best cheesesteak in town. But that wasn't the thing that blew me away. It was one of these Michael Solomonov restaurants. So he runs Zahav, and, you know, I guess they're like Israeli, like some are high end. But the thing that blew me away was it was the French fries, right? And it was all technique, right? Because like French fries, like, yeah, obviously the potatoes they're using were good, but it was like, oh, God damn it. They went through, I'm like, these are a three-step at least process, right? And they're like, yeah, it was. And it was like, because the texture was so perfect. And I'm like, oh, man, it's so rare when you run into somebody that did something perfectly. I'm like, man, I know how much work it went into that. Tell them that I appreciate what went into these, because I'm not sure anybody else mentions it.
Yeah, the whole blanching of the fries first, you know. That makes a huge difference, you know, and then the right temperature. I mean, there are a lot of things with something as simple as French fries. And,
yeah.
You know, you just, when you do run into something like that, it's like, oh, wow, they were actually thinking a lot about that.
Yeah, and when every little thing matters. And the other one was like, and I'm going to do a whole episode on the Philadelphia trip, so it's going to be a little repetitive, but it's like a New York City style pizza place, but the whole place is 100% vegan. Cheese, meat, everything. But they get the base and they season all the meat themselves. Like, they worked on making their own blend of the cheese to make it exactly the way they wanted it. And I'm like, their dough is one of the best New York style pizza doughs I've ever had. And I'm like, it doesn't matter if it was vegan or not. This is one of the best pizzerias in the country. And the fact that more people don't know about it is because you lose that objectivity. Some people lose that when they see the term vegan, or they're not paying attention to the details. But that kind of place inspires me a lot, where I just like, you know what, their dedication, and they just like, oh, I'm just doing it this way because this is the right thing. It's the right way of doing it. And yeah, maybe these French fries took way too much effort, but you know, if you just hope that somebody walks in and says, man, I think these are the best French fries I've ever had. I'm like, yeah. And that doesn't happen. Like we talked about the turkey sandwich, doesn't happen on accident.
No.
Welcome to the world of Punches and Popcorn, where we dive into the bone-breaking and kung-fu-kicking world of martial arts cinema. Join us on the path as we explore a new movie every episode, discussing the history, fighting styles, science, and more from a broad range of fight films. Everything from Bruce Lee to Jean-Claude Van Damme to John Wick. There's plenty of room in our temple of couch potato style. So listen in and subscribe to Punches and Popcorn on your favorite podcast app.
Hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am a host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunch Door podcast network, which is everywhere.
And honestly, I think most people know it. Like, the best things,
yeah,
just aren't easy.
No.
They just really aren't easy.
No, or sometimes it's the best thing is simple, right? You get a perfect seasonal tomato and you're just salting it and doing something easy to it. Salt and oil and have it on a great piece of bread with something else. That can also be amazing. But yeah, I don't know. I found it very inspiring to try making different sauces recently too. was messing around with Mexican salsas recently and made one that kind of blew me away having made it. I mean, I'd tasted it a bunch of times, so it's often referred to as just like taqueria salsa. It's like just green salsa. And it's not like a tomatillo salsa. It's kind of sometimes it has avocado, and it's often referred to as avocado salsa or aguate or aguacate.
You're talking about like the creamy kind of pourable one? Yeah, we like that one on tacos too.
But often they're actually not making it with avocado because it's way cheaper to make it without avocado, and they use zucchini in it. And it doesn't oxidize. It stays longer. And you can still make it creamy with adding oil and everything else. So I made it that way with silken tofu in it to make sure it got emulsified. Man, one of the best sauces I've ever made. I think I made 2 or 3 quarts of it all at the same time. I was just dipping everything in that. But that made me inspired just to learn more and to what else can I try next? Should I make salsa matcha next? Should I make something else next? But those kind of things, when you make something like, man, I think this might be one of the best things I've ever made, just gets you excited to try something else.
And it feels good.
Yeah, it does, right?
Yeah.
Kind of intrigued, was there anything recently that kind of grabbed you that you were trying out that you made?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I've been talking a lot. I mean, probably since the spring. I can't remember. We were watching it over the winter for a little bit. And I'm not sure we've actually finished it, but Taco Chronicles on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so all the different regions in Mexico, all the different sauces and salsas and so techniques they use to make tacos.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and they circle around. They go to Las Vegas. My sister's coming in a couple of weeks from Las Vegas. She lives out there. And I recently was talking to her about this sauce we've been making at Fox Run for a lot of things that we do with pork. And I feel like I saw a version of it on Taco Chronicles. So there's the inspiration. But they definitely didn't put mezcal in it. So we're making an orange mezcal sauce.
Okay.
That's kind of like one of the taco sauces that I saw. And, you know, the guys were just literally throwing it on the tacos with a spoon.
Love
from that. About a foot away.
Great.
And it was like a super, super cool show in terms of how this guy was making the tacos. And he literally did it for 8 hours a day. It was the craziest thing.
Oh, yeah.
But this stuff, they use it for the El Pastor.
Okay.
Style pork that they do where they marinate the pork overnight and they put it on a vertical spit and then, you know, spin it around and shave it off. It's just really cool to be able to watch them do that. But adding the mezcal for me was like, wow, that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted that smokiness.
So was that your more of a marinade or more of a finishing sauce that you were making?
I think it's an anything sauce.
Okay.
And, you know, we just...
So is achiote in it too or...
So I use... New Mexican chilies and guajillo chilies, so the dried chilies. I hydrate those, you know, sometimes overnight, but you can just do them in some hot water. But a lot of times I'll just do them in the orange juice. So the base for the sauce is a lot of orange juice and, you know, a fair amount of the chilies. So it turns into this like this brick orange, you know, brick colored kind of orange sauce. And, you know, there's onions and garlic. And, you know, sometimes I like to cook the onions a little bit. You know, in a lot of salsas, it's always raw.
Yeah.
And just to tamp down on the sort of acrid flavors of raw onion. And it just makes the sauce so much smoother.
Yeah.
But you get that little bit of bite from the mezcal. And I would say it's probably half gallon of OJ. And I put about 8 ounces of mezcal in it. So you can actually taste it.
That's fun.
You know, a little bit of fresh cilantro, you know, grind it up in the blender. Or with an immersion blender, regular blender, whatever. And it's just, it's a really fantastic thing for marinating pork. We're using it right now in the food and wine experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly some of the techniques there, you know, we love Mexican food. We love margaritas. And it was really interesting. I'd never been to Mexico. My sister's been living down there for, you know, 4 years or so. So she came back with a lot of interesting techniques, and she would always send me pictures and stuff. So, you know, that there's that inspiration for sure. But you know, there's also, you know, so what other people are doing. We have bison tacos on the menu at
Fox Run, fun.
And they are hands down one of the most popular things right next to the club. You know, if we don't have bison, someone comes in for bison tacos just about every day.
Now, my recollection, there is a bison farm in the Finger Lakes.
Yes, so Mud Creek Bison Ranch, just off of Route 86, north of Corning, in Savona.
Mm.
And Chris Comstock, owner, awesome guy. I don't know how he's doing what he's doing.
They're tremendous.
He's making it.
They're tremendous animals.
He has a huge, huge event space that he's working out of, and a ton of bison roaming around his property. And it's always great to get together with him. And we just, whenever he can bring it over, he's also the delivery guy too. So
of course,
just
that goes without saying.
Sure.
I think I want to wrap up just because I want to say words around onions for a second. So especially around Mexican cooking. So I don't know how much you messed around with this or looked into it, but a lot of the, and we're coming up on our hours. So we're going to finish off with this just because I want to nerd out about onions for a second. So a lot of, you know, a lot of traditional Mexican tacos, you'll get the, you know, the toppings of white onion and cilantro and then a sauce typically, right? So often those white onions are very crisp, but they don't have a lot of heat to them. Do you know why they're not hot with onion flavor?
That I do not know.
So I'm going to throw something your way. So this is another way of, without cooking the onions, you can take away the heat and just keep that crisp flavor, you know, that brightness almost.
Okay.
Is almost always when they're like diced or sliced, they're running cold water over those, or they're soaking them in cold water. So just like a lot of like the pizza places soak the celery in cold water.
Sure.
You know, keep that crispness. Mm-hmm. It's actually what you do with the white onions. So if you're slicing, like if you're doing slices for burgers or whatever, if you run cold water over it, like on like a rack into like a container or run it over, you take away almost all that surface heat and you just get that bright, crisp onion flavor without that heat from it. So sure. Same thing if you large dice it, you're going to puree it into something. If you just soak them for a little bit and then puree it, you get that onion flavor, that brightness, but without the heat at all. So you can do that and still puree it and have that beautiful flavor.
Interesting. It's kind of like a habanero. I always wanted to get the habanero flavor, but mm-hmm. not the heat.
Well, shout out to what is it? Rose Seven Seeds for making the habanada.
Exactly.
It's a hell of a product.
Love those guys.
So cool. So once again, gloriousgarlicfestival.com, August 2nd and 3rd. Go check out Brud's demo on Sunday the 3rd at what time? Roughly?
I believe it's the 12 o'clock slot.
Okay,
I'd have to double check because, you know, I was going to try to see if I could do a class on Saturday, but, you know, a demo on Saturday, but just not working out. It's such a busy weekend. You know? We have 10 weeks of summer here, July and August, and, you know, into the first couple weeks in September, and FoxRun has just gotten really, really, really busy.
That's awesome. So, and for everybody, go to foxrunvineyards.com on the west side of Seneca Lake. If you're not making it part of your agenda on the west side of Seneca Lake, what are you doing? You got to stop there, get some amazing food, get some great wines, try some more bread sandwiches, get that turkey sandwich. It's good stuff. Anything else I missed, man?
I don't think so, man. It's great to see you, Chris.
All right. Nice to see you as well. And we'll be back next time on the Food About Town podcast. Make sure you check out some of our newer shows like Common Thread from Rory Van Grohl and Greg Benoit, talking about living the hardcore music life and how it's affected them as adults. Also want you to check out the Bossy Show from Kelly Bush and Kelly Metris, talking about being a business owner. It's frank. It's honest. This is the kind of show you want to listen to people talk about business on. And we'll be back next time with more on the Food About Town podcast. Thanks for listening to the Food About Town podcast. If you aren't already subscribed, what are you waiting for? Go to your podcast app of choice and make us your favorite podcast by subscribing and leaving a review if you can. Music for the podcast was created by the fabulous Taurus Savant. You can hear more of his work at taurussavant.bandcamp.com and make your presence known by seeing him perform live. Food About Town is a proud member of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Oh no, here comes McKenneth!
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Do you want to learn more about onions? Go to foodabouttown.onions.com.tacos.co.ca.